Welcome back. It's Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you with us right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. So join us here about the Freddie Gray case. 310-410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on our Facebook pages or send us an email. It's talkinsteinershow.org, but do call in at 410-319-8888. We're here with Dwight Pettit, defense attorney who represented clients in many lawsuits against the police in misconduct cases and much more. Doug Colbert, professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law. As we look at this hearing coming up tomorrow, that will begin to determine how the Freddie Gray case will be tried. Gentlemen, good to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Mark.
So let me get it straight. So tomorrow's case, there are two hearings coming up. One's on September the 10th. And one's tomorrow. The one, September 10th is the one where they're going to decide venue, right?
That's what I understand.
So what's tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow the judge is going to be deciding some very important pretrial motions. And it's been the police strategy, their lawyer strategy, the union, has always proceeded on two levels. One is to remove the state's attorney, Ms. Mosby, from the case. And the second is to move the trial outside of Baltimore. Both would be extraordinary situations if a judge agreed with a defense argument. In terms of Ms. Mosby, because that motion is going to be heard tomorrow, the police are not accustomed to a local prosecutor not only bringing charges, but actually giving every indication that she is dedicated to bringing the offenders to justice, that is, those who are responsible for the killing of Freddie Gray. Throughout the country, Mark, there have been over 2,700 police killings in the past decade. And of those 2,700 killings, more than 98% of the officers involved have never been charged with the crime. So we're talking about a very small percentage, between 1 and 2% of police officers who have been charged with a crime. And Ms. Mosby has shown that she wants to do everything possible to make sure that there is a fair trial and that the people responsible are held accountable. In other words, she wants her day in court. She wants to be able to present evidence and to establish a guilt beyond a reasonable doubt if she can.
But what are the arguments that I know you probably don't agree with, Dwight, but what are the arguments that they will make in terms of why Marilyn Mosby should not be able to try the case?
Well, a lot of the arguments, Mark, were based on personal attacks on Ms. Mosby, in my opinion, in relationship to the early things that we heard in terms of her involvement with the case in terms of more as an investigator than prosecutor, certain statements that she made that they, when she announced the indictments, that they felt crossed the line. And one of the things that really bothers me in terms of the allegation that she, in fact, had prior, or her staff had prior conversations with the pathologist. I thought that that was normal because how else do you formulate an indictment unless you know the cause of death? I would think she has to talk to the pathologist. But that's one of the grounds that they raised, that she had conversations with the pathologist. And a lot of it, when they subpoenaed her, in my opinion, they were bringing her, trying to put her on the stand in relationship to something that I've never seen happen before in terms of her conduct, as I've indicated before, as the prosecutor. And I just think that when Judge Williams quashed, in fact, the subpoenas, that sort of sent a message that he is not going to be involved in this attack, orchestrated attack, on Ms. Mosby or her staff. I think that motion should be denied.
So it sounds like from what Williams has done, Judge Williams has done in the past, that he may, in fact, deny this particular motion.
Well, I think any judge who's looking at the factual allegations that have been presented should come to the conclusion that the defense has not met its burden of taking this extraordinary action of removing an elected official who's been charged with prosecuting crime. I mean, that has to be done in the rarest of circumstances. And as Dwight said, most of the reasons here suggest that the motion was filed not so much with the view of success, but of trying to influence the public, of trying to make it seem that Ms. Mosby should not be the prosecutor on this case.
Well, Dwight, I mean, as an attorney, but also someone who's been deeply involved in the political life of the city for a long, long time, what is the political motivation, do you think, around the attacks on Mosby? I mean, because they seem to be taking the form of a kind of legal questions, but...
Well, I think it's basically to muddy the water. You've heard that expression, you throw enough blank against the wall,
right,
something might stick.
Right.
And I think that's all of this is. Like, you make the attack based on the fact that a husband represented the district in which this occurred. But what does that mean? Are you supposed to recuse yourself if a husband was mayor? That means you can't prosecute any cases in the city of Baltimore. That makes no sense. And so a lot of these motions are without merit, in my opinion, and without a legal basis. But it doesn't hurt to taint the waters. And I don't fault the defense. The defense, this is a tough case. And, they have a tough case, and Ms. Mosby has a tough case.
You might try the same things with you.
Try everything you can, and maybe something might work. It doesn't hurt.
Sure. I mean, if you're a defense lawyer in this case, you not only want to remove the prosecution team, which has really been doing battle with six different defense lawyers and holding their own, certainly, but you also do want to get the case out of Baltimore. You're concerned that there will be people on the jury, for instance, if there is a jury trial, who are going to be representing the African-American community. So as a defense lawyer, you're looking to move this case away from Baltimore, but also to have a prosecutor who is not as steadfast, not as committed to the prosecution. And that's what police are accustomed to. They don't usually find local prosecutors who are taking the action that we have seen so far in Baltimore City.
And Doug is correct, the intimidation aspect of the prosecution. And, of course, the big motion, which we are sliding around because that's not tomorrow, that's the motion to remove, and that's a whole different issue.
Now, that's the one that people think may have more legs, any of them, in terms of what's going on.
Well, but what they're arguing is that the overriding publicity and what has taken place in terms of that has prejudiced the jury pool, and you cannot pick unbiased jury in Baltimore City. I think that is – I go back to the basic rule, voir dire, explaining to your public, your listening audience. Voir dire is the mechanism which lawyers are able to, in fact, question the jury to bring out any bias. And my argument has always been, and in most cases it prevails, is that the main question to a juror is, can, in fact, you reach an impartial, unbiased decision based on evidence in the courtroom? Once the juror answers yes to that, then the juror is qualified. So I think the argument that you can't pick a jury in Baltimore City that will be unbiased and impartial is not a good argument when you consider the mechanism of voir dire. But just let me add one thing. If the case were to be removed, in my opinion, unless it would be removed to Prince George's County, which is sort of analogous to Baltimore City, then the case is lost. So that's major, in my opinion.
I have a question about what you just said, what that sets up when people hear that. But let me go to the phones first, the 410-319-8888, to join us here with our two guests. And Bill, in Baltimore City, you're on the air.
Hey, first let me just say hello to everybody.
Welcome.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
And Dwight, did you say something? I'm glad you said it because it made me think of something. When you said about throwing enough mud in the water for something to stick. You know, I just got through posting something last night in reference to Nick Mosby running for mayor. Now, I don't know who's trying to encourage him to run for mayor, but to me it seems like that's some divide and conquer, because they know if he runs for mayor, that's going to create some problems for Maryland. And so, I mean, I just think that's one of them things that you're talking about in terms of throwing something against the wall for something to stick. And I would just like to hear how you respond to that.
Well, I was a little bit surprised that he would make that movement at this point in time, considering the spotlight that's on his wife. And I agree with you. I think, if he has those ambitions, they should more or less be kept in his pocket until this matter clears certain hurdles.
Do you think that could affect the case?
I think it could have some impact in terms of these allegations and innuendos that all of this is political. That's the basis, in my opinion, of where the defense has been coming from, that this is not about – that her movements are not about justice and guilt or innocence, but it's about her moving toward making herself a political entity and her husband, if you want to extend it to Mr. Mosby. So I do think it has some overall effect and impact.
But also, Mark, when Bill talks about muddying the waters, I mean, there's so many rumors that are floating around right now, and they, I think they're intended, again, to fit the strategy of moving the case out of Baltimore. I think what we're seeing just in terms of the police presence and the way in which, rumors suggest that the case is not a strong one, that somehow there are people who are going to have charges dismissed. There's no basis for any of this. But anything that will heighten the intense reaction of people who are wanting and have a right to expect that this trial will remain in Baltimore and that their elected official and her attorneys will prosecute this case fits the strategy of arguing to a judge that this is not the right environment for this case. And I think we're going to see more of it. I think these are all motions that they're premature now, but they're going to be heard again and again during jury selection, assuming that the case remains here. And so, in a sense, the defense is setting the framework, the groundwork, for what later will be even a stronger argument to say that the police defendants cannot get a fair trial.
So let me go to the phones here again and get a quick question, come back. There's a question changing venue, which will be the biggest question, because the other question tomorrow will be whether to separate the trials or dismiss cases. Dismiss the case. The chances of them dismissing the case against police are probably...
I mean, the dismissal of the case is all based on Ms. Mosby's presumed misconduct.
Right. So
but as Dwight said, there really is – if they were ever to do something like that, almost every prosecutor would be found guilty of misconduct for speaking to the medical examiner, for investigating a case. See, one of the things that happens here in Baltimore, Mark, is the police are accustomed to bringing the criminal charges against people. In every other jurisdiction that I know – the police present and speak to the prosecutor,
right,
who then decides whether to bring charges, usually after some type of investigation. So what Ms. Mosby and her staff are doing are exactly what every prosecutor should be doing. They should be talking to witnesses, assessing the evidence. But so these grounds are really meritless in my view.
Let me get to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Leo, welcome.
Good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows. I'm well.
Morning, Leo.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Hi. Well, let me tell you, the majority of the police in this city, I guess 90% or better, don't live in the city. Now, they feed from the public trough, but they don't live in this city, and that's by design, with the support of the mayor and city council. Let me just tell you that if they dare move that case, Mark Steiner, you know about the Freedom Riders, don't you?
All right, we were there together,
yeah,
man. We were there together.
We need to. We're going to resurrect the Freedom Riders, and when they take it to Somerset County or La Plata, we're going to go by thousands. We will issue a national call by thousands to bring in blacks, whites, and everybody else in coalition fashion, and demonstrate and lock down that bridge that we have. That bridge that crosses from Maryland into the Eastern Shore or wherever else they're going to take it. But we're not going to have it. I dare them. I dare them to take that trial out of this city. It's an outrage to even think of something of that nature.
Leo, appreciate the call. And I think that feeling, Dwight, is one of the powerful movements in the city. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, because I think one of the first premises that we have to examine is the pretrial publicity. Well, not only has Baltimore City been exposed to pretrial publicity, but the world has been exposed to pretrial. Right. So how does removing it cure anything? And one of the cases that they used in the initial arguments by the defense was my case. It was a civil case, the Mungo case, where they removed it to Howard County. Then that was part of the first argument, which I think that was a horrible decision because originally in that case, the motion was denied, and then it was renewed and granted in terms of a month later. And there's another problem, which I know Doug can address too. The interesting part about Maryland is that if the judge, and we're just being speculative, if the judge were to grant the removal, there's no mechanism in the Maryland statute as to how it's decided in terms of due process as to where the case would go. There's no evidence. The rules don't provide for any evidence to be submitted for any type of hearing or whatever. It's strictly an arbitrary and capricious decision by the administrative judge. And so I have great problems with the constitutionality of removal and where it would go and so forth, if, in fact, the removal would be order would be granted by the primary trial judge.
See, Mark, what this case is going to test is whether or not Baltimore City will provide a fair trial for the officers and a fair trial or a fair hearing for the community. So in every criminal case, we always want the accused to get the benefit of the procedures that say, if you're guilty, we want evidence to be presented, and we want a jury, as Dwight says, that is and will be fair and impartial. We don't want any type of a atmosphere that makes it difficult for jurors to do their job, and that's very important to stress here. But we also don't want the defense to – I understand the defense strategy there on many levels. They would like a friendlier prosecutor and a friendlier environment. But as long as we can find 12 impartial jurors, and certainly in a city where there's about 300,000 eligible jurors, we certainly can find 12 people who will judge this case solely on the evidence and wherever the evidence takes them.
Don't you have to be a juror, though, you have to be a registered voter, right?
Yeah, and there's about 270 or 280,000 registered voters. That's according to the papers that have been submitted.
That's interesting.
Because I've read them.
Given the numbers that come out in most local primary elections.
You know, the thing about Baltimore City, from experience, Baltimore City jurors are much more conservative than the press makes it out to be. People realize.
Oh, yeah.
And the jury pools nowadays because of the change of voting patterns or voting registered voters are not, as people would automatically assume, all African-American. The jury pools are almost like 50-50 when you consider the voting registration is much more reflective in terms of those juror pools.
And but so, it's also insulting, Mark. I mean, it truly is insulting to the entire Baltimore community and particularly the African-American community to suggest that police officers cannot get a fair trial in this city. They will get a fair trial because people are not only sworn to do that, but jurors take their responsibilities quite seriously. And I've always been most impressed with our jury system.
Let me reopen the phones here with our guests here, Dwight Pettit and Doug Colbert, 410-319-8888, as we look at the hearing coming up tomorrow with Freddie Gray. We'll be hearing hopefully from Doug during the course of that hearing. If it ends in time for him to call in, we'll be covering that again on Thursday morning. I will not be able to be here Thursday, but Kay Whitehead will be taking my place here Thursday morning, and she'll be covering that trial. Hopefully with our two guests here today as well at 410-319-8888. Let us go to Kenneth. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark. Good
morning.
Everybody.
Good morning.
Hi, Kenneth.
Good
morning.
This will be truly one of the greatest cases, I think, in a long time since all Protestants, what's his name, the O.J. Simpson.
I was gonna, that's what I thought
but,
you were saying.
But listen now, if they do try to take this out of, that's going to be one of the problems. The second problem will be the jury selection. And then the third problem will be to get someone impartial, black or white, okay? It's going to be hard to select. That's going to be a hard thing to select. And this trial will probably go on for maybe 2 years before it actually gets started, you know. And from what I've seen, I'm not no professional or no lawyer or anything, but from what I've seen from other cases, you know, it's like they did with the two guys that shot those people in Maryland. I call them the highway killers, those two guys that killed people. A guy was in a truck and he was shooting people. Well, I forgot their names. But they took that case out of Maryland, and that's where they did most of the killings, and took it down south so that they could get the death sentence.
Well, yeah, actually, Kenneth, you said that. Let me interrupt you, Kenneth, because just clarity. That's not quite true. I mean, the Montgomery County State Attorney at that point, who Doug Gansler, mm-hmm. was going to seek the death penalty here in Maryland, but they gave it to Virginia. So wherever he would have gone, the death penalty was going to be part of that case for the Beltway sniper. But you want to comment a bit on what Kenneth was saying before we go to our next caller?
Okay.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Well, this assumption that the – let me just put it this way. In all the jury trials that I've had, both civil and criminal, you would be surprised at the number of jurors. When voir dires come up and they say, do you have a prejudice against the police department? Well, you'd be surprised of the candor and the honesty of most jurors. Most jurors will disqualify themselves. We usually lose half the pool of jurors because they'll tell you right up, I love the police and I'll support them. I believe everything that they say, or the fact that I don't believe the police, and therefore the judges have a great opportunity to get rid of most of the jurors by their own admissions. And so that's just part of your voir dire. And so in this particular case, you've got voir dire for cause, you've got preemptory strikes. And so with these many defendants, they have enough strikes, and I don't want to be too technical, but there are enough strikes that the defense will have to be able to remedy any type of prejudices that might have been come about because of pretrial publicity.
Could it take 2 years for this case to come to fruition?
No, it's not going to take 2 years. And we have a judge right now who's by reputation is a no-nonsense judge. He will do a great deal of controlling inside the courtroom. He'll let the lawyers argue, but he'll limit the argument as well. And I don't expect that this trial is going to take an exceedingly long time. In fact, the longest part of the trial may very well be the jury selection part itself. And that's the most important part of the trial, to make sure that both sides are satisfied with who gets selected. But I want to make this point, Mark, because there's no guarantee here that this case will go to a jury. And the defendants have the right to be tried
by
a judge.
Very good point. Excellent.
And because they can be tried by a judge, this strategy, I've been following police killings and charges for 35 years now, Mark, and I will tell you, there are many instances where police will choose a sympathetic judge or a judge that they perceive to be sympathetic over 12 people from the community. We just saw that happen in Cleveland, where
exactly.
The police officer went on top of the hood, shot a dozen shots through the windshield, killed two
people.
And they chose a judge who found that the police officer acted reasonably. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. In my opinion, it would be against the public interest to have a judge take the place of the community. But as of Maryland law now, as I understand it, that's the right of the accused. So we have to want a jury to represent the community in this case. And it should be a diverse jury. It should be a jury that can work together to reach the truth of what happened.
And let me just comment on something else, too. The time element will be controlled by the next major issue, and that's severance, as to whether or not who will be tried together or whether there will mm-hmm. be – the state wants two joint trials. The defense might ask for separate trials. If there are separate trials, then, of course, that the time period is going to be very much elongated. Now, that will be, in my opinion – controlled by the law, which is the Supreme Court case of Bruton, for your audience, which means that if there are any inculpatory statements that were made by the co-defendants against other defendants, then there springs up the automatic right, if the defense counsel requests it, for a separate trial, because he cannot cross-examine the person in a joint trial because of Fifth Amendment rights and so forth. So that will, in many cases, determine the length of these proceedings, because we don't know how many trials they're going to be.
So I'm going to go back to the phone to you very quickly before we run out of time. But that might be one part of the hearing tomorrow that may be in the defense's favor, separating the cases out.
Does want to separate. They do want two trials. They want four defendants going first and two going in the second trial.
But the lawyers for the defense want separate trials for all of
them. Well, they always want separate trials because the more examination of witnesses you can do, if you can have five different transcripts from five different trials,
right.
you're likely to make better use of the inconsistencies at each of those trials. Also, the delay is another factor. We like joinder. We like one big trial, two big trials from the government's point of view because it's more efficient and it's less expensive.
410-319-8888. Lolita, you're on the air. Hi, Lolita. Welcome. You're on the air.
Station, very hard to hear in some ways. I just wanted to point out one little simplistic comment thing that I've been observing. I don't watch TV very often, but the news media and doesn't really play up the Freddie Gray incident and the riot in a positive light. Not that they have to, but they're always highlighting the riot, and so it's feeding into the perception of, you know, Baltimore is such a bad place. We need to probably get this trial out of the city because you're not going to get a fair trial in the city. If I have served on a jury before, I actually consider it to be an honor to serve on a jury because it's part of, you know, just weighing. I mean, I don't know. It's just really important to do, and, you know, so I think we can. I know we can get a fair, impartial jury in Baltimore City, because the people that I sat with on the jury, we all were committed to working out. This,
right.
You know, and we all, nobody had no hidden agendas or anything like that. We fought. We worked it out. And it's just it's an interesting process that everybody should take part in.
Well, let me get some closing thoughts here from our guest before we go on to the mayor who's about to come on the show.
Well, just on that last point, in terms of the publicity, it's not whether there is a lot of publicity. It's whether it's prejudicial against the rights of one party or the other, in this case against the accused. And I think the caller makes an excellent point. Most of the media that I'm seeing is something that actually fits the defense strategy of showing Baltimore in a bad light, of making it seem like every person who's going to serve on a jury has already convicted the police, and that's simply not accurate.
Final thought, Dwight, before we have to roll?
The only thing I can say is that I know that we can get a jury, an impartial jury, in Baltimore City. I know that voir dire will solve whatever problems in terms of pretrial publicity. And I just want to caution the public. We've come a long way with Ms. Mosby, the state's attorney. You know, everybody's saying, well, if people are going to protest, they have a right to protest. But let's remember, I use this example in terms of Star Trek. She's gone places where others feared to go. In other words, she's opened up a real new parameter in terms of scrutinizing and going forward with police in terms of making them accountable. And I think we should keep that in mind regardless of what decisions Judge Williams makes or what decision eventually a jury will make.
Amen.
I want to thank Dwight Pettit, defense attorney. Thanks so much for joining us once again. Always good to see you, Dwight.
Good to see you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
And Doug Holbert, University of Maryland School, professor of law. Good to have you with us as well,
thank
Doug.
You,
thank
Mark.
You so much. And we will be covering this tomorrow. With any luck, Doug will be able to call in after the hearing to see what's going to leave us an update. And Thursday we'll come back to look at what that meant on Thursday morning show. So please stay with us. We're going to have a very brief break, and when we come back, it's time for a conversation with Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, of course, our mayor. We'll be right back. Stay with us.